Welcome to the Pharma Forum podcast. In this episode, I speak with Dr. Jeffrey Gross, founder of Recelebrate, neurological surgeon and expert in the field of regenerative medicine. Our conversation focuses on stem cells and how patient lives are benefiting from a recent transitioning from traditional surgical methods to innovative use of stem cells. While surgery remains critical for emergencies and red flag situations, it is the gap that can be filled with less invasive methods that holds potential stem cells. And then, indeed, there is prevention, of course. A podcast episode that straddles the bridge, perhaps, between the traditionally medical and the progressive and perhaps more wellness-leaning, there are, nevertheless, certainly insights to be gleaned here and, indeed, further musings and even conversations to be had in future. But, as stands, here's a first taste, if you will, and, as ever, thank you for listening. This is web editor Nicole Raleigh, and today I have with me Dr. Jeffrey Gross, founder of Recelebrate, a highly recognized neurological surgeon and an expert in the field of regenerative medicine. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So today we'll be discussing how patient lives have been transformed by a transitioning from traditional surgical methods to the innovative use of stem cells. Additionally, we'll touch upon the appetite for the use of stem cells for longevity and explore the health span notion that has been ever more keenly spoken about recently. But before we begin, perhaps you could tell listeners a little bit more about your background and your personal journey to what you do today with Recelebrate.
Thank you for the opportunity. I practice traditional medicine as a spine specialist, practicing different aspects of medicine for patients with neck and back problems. It occurred to me that there was a gap in care between, I'll call it, the non-surgical and the surgical treatments for so many of my patients, where they may have failed to get adequate benefits from, let's say, physiotherapy and medications and perhaps even injections. But leaving the last thing on the menu being only surgery, they weren't quite ready themselves for surgery. And they would always ask me, you know, what else can I do? I'm not quite ready to undergo the knife. What can I do? How about lasers? How about stem cells? Well, being, you know, someone who's had a molecular biology and biochemistry background at university level that I sort of left behind while I went into medicine, the nerdy part of me tapped back into that and said, you know, you're right. I'm going to look back into that. A lot has happened during the years of my training and my practice. So instead of going to the stodgy old neurosurgery conferences every year where professors pat themselves on the back for doing the same thing for 20-some years that their professors had done for 20-some years earlier, I went to a stem cell conference and I started to go to more of them and I got educated and I got trained and I read and I started writing because there are very few people doing this effectively. Particularly in the States, we're behind here in the States. So I took it upon myself. I had a renewal in my professional pursuits. I had a reinvigorated energy in what I was doing, and it became rewarding. And now, if that's all I did the rest of my second half of the career, I would love it. It's been fantastic.
Thank you. So if we pick up on that, that energy, that renewed vigor, and we think about medicine and healthcare these days, I mean, it's seemingly advancing at the speed of light. And regenerative medicine deals with the functional restoration of specific tissue and or organs of patients suffering, as you say, with severe injuries or indeed chronic disease conditions in a state where the body's own regenerative responses don't really suffice. And stem cells are endorsed with indefinite cell division potential and can transdifferentiate into other types of cells, thus emerging as a frontline regenerative medicine source. So could you tell us more about the perhaps different types of stem cells and their potential uses?
Sure. So from the top down, the most powerful stem cells are the ones you mentioned there, the ones that can differentiate into anything. And these are omnipotent stem cells. These are the ones that made us when we were embryos inside of our mother's wombs. So as those develop into less powerful but still quite helpful stem cells, they go from, you know, omnipotent down to pluripotent to multipotent. And by the time they are reserved in our body for uses that our body taps into naturally, we're typically using ones that can only differentiate into the various tissues locally. So whether a liver stem cell becomes, you know, a liver cell, or a hematopoietic stem cell in the bone marrow becomes a blood forming cell or something like that. They have a limited vocational pursuits. So these are the ones that we understand the best. The, like you said, the fast pace of this research is working towards coaxing these, we'll call them mature stem cells that can only do so much, backwards in their lineage towards a more powerful stem cell. And these are called induced pluripotent stem cells. And they are a cutting edge of research. They are not really clinically available at this time. Only these end multipotent stem cells are available. And these are typically called MSCs, or mesenchymal stromal cells.
Okay, so could you explain their potential in tackling not only chronic conditions, but even, as I mentioned at the beginning, extending health and vitality as set within overall an accelerated and ameliorated life sciences landscape?
Yes, happily. So, you know, we talk about how this benefits an organism, a person. It benefits the organs or tissues, as I think you mentioned earlier. But really, we have to break that down to our own cells. What we're doing here is working at the cellular level to take our aging cells that have experienced a lifetime of exposure, leading to something called chronic inflammation. And if we look at, and we probably heard that before, chronic inflammation might be something you have from an old knee injury. Some people have it as a condition, like a rheumatoid arthritis or Crohn's disease or other autoimmune problems. These are chronic ongoing inflammation in our body, and they can also be in response to something that's bad in the water source by you or in the airwaves. Maybe you live near a cell tower or a power station or something. So there are many aspects of our environment that expose our body's cells to this chronic inflammation. Chronic inflammation ages us. And one measure of age isn't just what's on the calendar, but how much of this chronic inflammation our cells have been exposed to. And in fact, someone used the term inflammaging to show the likeliness of the two that really have something to do with each other. The more of this chronic inflammation your cells are exposed to over time, and for those my fellow nerds, the area under the curve of time and amount, that exposure ages our cells. And that's why there are tests now that can measure your biological age, which look at these changes in your cell. There are different types. And we do this for people. And it's one way to help identify areas that we can improve upon to slow that inflammation. So what's going on in our cells that leads to this chronic inflammation? Chronic inflammation then leads to the accumulation of some bad molecules, some twisted and misfolded molecules. The most popularly known one is the tau protein that forms beta amyloid in Alzheimer's disease. So heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, you know, even type 2 diabetes and other diseases all have an inflammatory component. Even multiple sclerosis has an inflammatory component. So anything we can do to fight against inflammation, fights against disease, fights against accelerated aging, and fights against degeneration or degradation of our own cells. Working the opposite direction against that is one of the benefits of regenerative medicine. And our body has that potential. We have our own stem cells for a reason. And for anyone that has perhaps remembers when you had a small child or you have a little niece and nephew, a three-year-old who skins his knee playing outside on the sidewalk, and, you know, mom dresses up the wound, cleans it, puts a bandage on it, kisses it, and sends him on his way. And a few days later, that bandage comes off because they're so active, and the scab is almost completely healed. And you think, wow, that was quick. Meanwhile, those of us like me, I'm 58. I bang my elbow on something and boy, it's bruised for 2 weeks, right? So it's the same. I'm the same person that healed fast at 3 years old. So my DNA hasn't changed. What's happened is my stem cells aren't as active. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we tap back into the youthful sources of the regenerative medicine of stem cells, and we use them to remind our own cells to program in an anti-inflammatory way, to make the proteins of repair and restoration and youthfulness, even for a period of time. And sometimes that's enough to help someone improve his or her knee cartilage or improve metabolism and slow the cellular aging process, which slows the disease formation and the age-related processes that were the setup for the question that you asked.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty fascinating stuff. I wonder what you would say, because there is a little bit of skepticism around this area of medicine, isn't there? So what would you say, what could you put across maybe example-wise in order to demystify a little bit more and maybe provide within that response the challenges that have arisen in shifting from surgical methods to this sort of regenerative medicine?
Well, listen, sir, I've done thousands of surgeries. Surgery, there's a role for surgery still, but I think there are way too many surgeries being done, and I've always fought against that. Surgery is the last option unless there's some type of urgency or emergency or red flag situation. So anything we can do to help fill that gap of non-surgical treatments or slow the need for surgery as new things come online and become developed or easier to do surgically, less invasive, I mean, the better. So regenerative medicine is simply tapping back into our own natural, youthful healing resources that aren't working as well. And that is probably the first thing I've mentioned. The second myth that probably needs to be debunked is the source. There are a few different sources of stem cell or regenerative medicine type particles from stem cells. And you can take it from your own body, have it concentrated and put back in you. But I'm a belief that, and although there are some good results there, that when you change the oil in your car, you don't put the old oil back in. So I prefer the perinatal sources. And these come from donors of mothers who have just delivered their newborn baby by C-section. And instead of throwing away the placenta, umbilical cord, and amniotic fluid, which is very rich in these, you know, healing and restorative and youthful cells that are programmed to fight inflammation. Because really the opposite of us degenerating is us regenerating. Those are the two ends of the spectrum here. So we want to flip the cell metabolism into a youthful kind of optimal mode. And so we take the sources from these donors. These tissues are screened and tested to make sure they don't have any infections or problems. And then they're made available to the public.
Okay. And I mean, that's pretty, it's quite a concept to take in, really, isn't it? This sort of regenerative effect on the degenerating body from a perinatal source like that. So is that the be all and end all then? Or is there something within lifestyle choices, for example, that can supplement what's that process that's just been undertaken? Are there lifestyle choices also, second part to the question, that perhaps might work in a preventative fashion? I mean, prevention has very much been a focus last year and before last year.
I completely agree. And I think the answer to both parts of your question is the same. Yes, all of the, we call them epigenetic choices that help influence which of our genes are being called upon to make certain proteins can help. If you eat an anti-inflammatory diet, you know, rich in fruits and vegetables and whole grains and good, you know, meats and fish and things, that helps because there's fewer exposure to all the bad chemicals and things that we have. If you exercise, you have natural influence upon your cells. If you do hormesis is a mild stress to your cells that make them more resilient and help clear out the aging population of cells called senescent or zombie cells. And you can do hormesis through exercise, hot sauna, cold plunge, and other methods. Those are common forms of hormesis. If you get restorative sleep, if you breathe properly, if you have mindfulness and know how to relax and stimulate your relaxed part of your nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system, all of these things will reduce the body inflammatory activities, the cells' activities, even neurostress. So less stress, for example, which is sometimes easy to say but hard to do. All of these things, I would prefer when we treat someone, when we give them some regenerative medicine, that they're already optimized with all these things. But yes, you can move towards an anti-inflammatory lifestyle without having stem cells or stem cell-derived biologics.
Thank you. So taking it all into consideration and thinking of the ever-unfolding progress of medical technology, in your opinion, what's the future trajectory of regenerative medicine? Do you think, looking at the horizon of 10 or 20 years and perhaps not requiring everyone to become plant-based eating yoga devotees?
So I do think we have a growing traction in the application and success in using regenerative medicine. The low-hanging fruit or the most efficient aspect currently and probably will be growing would be in use in joints and spine that are degenerating. You know, I'm a spine doctor, but one of my more frequent treatments now is helping people who are trying to avoid a knee surgery, a knee replacement, right? And these are patients who are told they're bone on bone or they have arthritis. That's my perfect patient because we can potentially help that person avoid surgery. So, and it's nothing I invented. This comes from some amazing applications and protocols and studies with over 15-year follow-up with success. So it's not, this isn't that new, really. It's just hard to gain traction, fighting uphill, at least in the States, against big pharma and other economic and political pressures, right? So that's been a challenge.
Insightful. Thank you very much, Jeff. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I feel there might be more in the future to discuss as well.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
And so that concludes another episode of the Pharma Forum podcast. You can find out more information about this episode, including a download link and information about previous installments of the series at pharmaforum.com/podcasts. The Pharma Forum podcast is also available on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, and Podbean, where you can find and subscribe by searching for Pharma Forum. Of course, don't forget to visit our website itself, where you can sign up for daily news and analysis bulletins, and follow us on Twitter, or X nowadays, at Pharma Forum. That's all for now. Thank you for listening.